Hey friends, I appreciate you tuning into the Deal Farm podcast, where I hope you feel at least mildly entertained and possibly even inspired to take big action towards improving your life and your business. On this episode of the Deal Farm, Kevin and I sit down with Dave Foster to talk about 1031 exchanges and some of the super creative ways investors can utilize this tax rule to drastically improve returns over time. Stay tuned. Kevin, what's happening, my man?
You know, it's a Wednesday and it's absolutely beautiful. Actually, it's raining here today. I'd say it's beautiful. I guess the rain is beautiful in a way, but it's kind of gloomy.
You're just such a positive person. Like, it just comes out of you without even thinking about it. It's just a wonderful, you're like, no, it's actually pretty crappy today.
Actually, I planted seed. I planted grass seed and I am so happy for the rain because I've overseeded the yard.
Nice.
And I knew it was going to rain, and I did it Friday evening. I dashed out, and as the sun was setting, I seeded the lawn. It rained all weekend. Here we are.
That's always good.
So it is a great thing, Ken,
yeah,
because my grass is growing.
Nice. It is that time of year. We've got we've got pollen in the air, man. This week officially kicks off pollen season in Georgia, like where the lake is just covered in a film of yellow right now, which is just.
I've officially started my nasal Allerflow squirts every day. Got my little nasal squirt. Gonna keep the allergies down. And you know, I talk about planting the tree, the plant in the grass. We planted a couple of trees. You and I, we both planted a ginkgo tree a few years ago, like within a week of each other.
Just randomly. Yeah.
Didn't even know it. Like, it was, I was like, I planted a ginkgo tree. And my dad was like, yeah, well, Ken just planted a ginkgo tree. I was like, how random is that?
It was during COVID. It was right after COVID had started. Like, we were a few weeks in and it was Anita's and I, it was our anniversary. And we wanted to go out of town. We had all these big plans that all got ruined. And we're like, well, what should we do to commemorate the anniversary that happened during COVID? And we planted a ginkgo tree. That was what we did.
Very cool. Yeah, we planted a ginkgo tree to commemorate the birth of Joshua, our son.
Oh, yeah.
And it just so happened that the timing was like that's right so when funny. You guys were doing yours too. Has it grown pretty well?
No, not at all, actually. I don't know what the deal is. It's in a good spot. It leafs out every year. It's just not getting bigger, really. I mean, it's the slowest because we planted a magnolia tree at the same time. The magnolia tree is like 20 feet high. And
right,
the ginkgo
right,
is still hovering at like 8 feet or so. It's just...
All right, well, that makes me feel a little better. Yeah, because ours is... it might be 10 feet, but it has not grown a lot. I mean, it's a slow grower.
I don't know if that's a ginkgo thing or if that we're just, it's not a good soil or we're not doing something right. It's just really slow. I'm not sure what the deal is.
I don't know. I actually looked at, because I had a little ginkgo envy after I saw yours because it was all golden this past fall. And I was like, man, Ken's turned out great. My ours just, I guess, different climate. Do you know there's only one type of ginkgo? There aren't different varieties. There's one ginkgo. It's just a ginkgo. So it really just comes down to the climate you live in.
Aren't the ginkgo trees the ones that are like in those kung fu movies, you know, where like they're all losing their leaves at the same time? There's this amazing fight scene going on.
Yeah, the golden leaves all falling in the background. Absolutely.
What's funny is that really does happen like that. Like all of a sudden it's golden, it's the most beautiful thing. And then in one day, they all just all fly off.
It's like a shower. Yeah, our son Joshua, he's going on 4. And it was so funny. We were out in the yard playing. And he looked over at his tree. He knows that's his tree. He's like, "Well, the leaves are gone. Where'd all the leaves go?" Like in a matter of 2 days. He just didn't see them. You know, one day they're there and the next day they're gone.
Don't blink. Do not blink and they're gone, man.
He freaked out. Well, you know, it is spring. It's the time for planting and growth. And I know you and Anita do a big old garden every year. This is that time of year.
It is. You know what? We haven't even talked about this yet. I have been shopping for a boat, man. I think I'm ready. I'm ready to pull the trigger.
Are you really? This spring, it's boat year. Now you get the boat for the lake?
I'm going to bite the bullet. Yeah, it'll be a lake boat. You know, we got two lakes here in Georgia. We can put it, we'll keep it at home. And then, but like a full blown surf boat, you know, because my kids are at the perfect age to surf, like in wakeboard and do all that fun stuff. And like, I got 6-7 good years at home. I want to fill those with boating memories.
Oh, I love it. Absolutely love it. You know, so one of the best things we did the last few years before COVID was we would get a houseboat and actually, you know, take all the kids, the 3 older kids and go live on a houseboat for a few days. It became, you know, the big, you know, getaway for the whole family. It's so great living on a boat. just spending a few days out on the water, just with each other. Love, and we're due. We're, you know, the young kids are old enough. We're due for another houseboat day.
Yeah,
houseboat weekend or houseboat week.
Well, you and I obviously experienced that, you know, back in high school. The high school youth group trip was, you know, 10 houseboats all tied together on a lake in Tennessee. How much fun was that? I mean, we used to love that, going up there and spending a whole week on a houseboat with a bunch of kids and friends.
I love that. So my love of that, really, when I was in college, when I was in the University of Georgia, we did a trip where we lived on a sailboat for a week. We it was over spring break. I can't remember what year it was. And in the school, the university put it together. And we drove down to Miami, hopped on this little boat, about 13 college kids and a captain, and sailed from a little boat. I mean, just a little bitty boat, two masts, little boat. And we sailed from Miami to the Bahamas and just went from little island to little island, you know, for the week. And it was absolutely loved that. So something about the water.
Being on the water. Yeah, reset. It's a good reset to be out in the fresh air and on some water. You know, speaking of boats, our next guest, Dave Foster, you know, I don't know a lot about him, but what I do know, he lived on a boat for some amount of time, like raised his family on a boat, which is just super intriguing. Grant, 1031s are intriguing, but like raising a family for 10 years on a boat, that's really intriguing. So I'm excited very to get much. Him in here and talk about it.
Yeah, let's bring him in. I want to hear his story. This is really interesting.
Let's do it. So Dave, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Great to have you today. We got lots to find out. I got to say, I'm really excited to hear your story.
Well, the first is this, you know, I'm looking at you, checking you out online, and it looks like you lived on a boat for some amount of time. And so even before we dive into 1031 and tax strategies, I want to hear the story about how you, did you raise kids on a boat? What did that look like?
We did. As a matter of fact, what's funny is the comment that will stick to me all my life. My wife's father almost disowned me. And people would continually come up to us after years and say, "Do you still live on a boat?" And my response always was, "Well, sure. I mean, you still live in a house?" It was the best experience of our lives. And we would do it again in a heartbeat.
Wait, so now, where were you based? Like, was this like, hey, you just lived in Florida, or did you go all over the place in the ship?
Well,
the
boat? So here's the story. I'm a Kansas farm boy. My wife is a Minneapolis city girl. We met in Denver, Colorado. What is not present at any one of those three places?
Right. Water.
Yeah. Right. So somewhere along the line, this magical moment happened and we had our first child. Mm-hmm. And I mean, anybody that's had a child knows that feeling. You throw away the TV. You just want to sit there and watch this little bundle. And you start to realize that the greatest commodity that you have and possess is not money, fame, fortune. It's time. And time is fleeting. So we started to say, well, my gosh, we're going to have more kids. We don't like to be stuck to the careers that we're in. So how can we get off the corporate train and do something different? So we started to look at cheap ways, kind of like the FIRE movement, right? Cheap ways to retire early. And what we realized is there are very few, particularly that involve whole families. But we kind of said, you know what? A boat. Let's buy a sailboat because it can just bob out in the water. It'll be cheap. It'll be cheap, he said. Yeah, right. And so then we said, well, how are we going to buy that boat? And then somebody said, I think it was her, she said, well, we could become real estate investors. It'll be easy, she said. So there we are. We had a game plan, which is why I'm known as Ready, Fire, Aim, Dave. Mm-hmm. So I went and bought a duplex in Denver, Colorado, fixed it up, put a renter in it, sold it later, and thought I made a great amount of money that was going to push us towards our 10-year goal to move aboard the boat and sail away. Till I met with my accountant. And my accountant said, man, you know, you got to write a check for $30,000. And I said, no, that's not part of the plan. He said, yeah, you do. I did not know at that point about the 1031 exchange, and shame on me because I'm an accountant. So I should know better. But I didn't, like a lot of people don't, because it's just this voodoo kind of thing that's out there. But as soon as I saw that tax bill, and by the way, 30 years later now, I still weep at night once in a while Because what the 1031 exchange allows you to do is to sell investment real estate. And instead of paying the tax on the profit, you get to reinvest it in new real estate. So you get the return from the deferred tax. So if I had taken $30,000 and got to keep the compounding return for 30 years, any guess how many hundreds of thousands of dollars I'd have right now from one transaction? So I learned my lesson. And we started doing 1031s for ourselves. And we said, oh my gosh, we got to start a company because people need to learn this. And at that point in time, in a real estate market where there were 4 or 5 million transactions, there were about 70,000 1031 exchanges. So it was really campfire knowledge that nobody knew. Today, well over 1 million to 1.5 1031s happening. People figured it out. But what we started to do was every time we would sell an investment property, we do a 1031 exchange and defer the tax and keep it going. That was how we moved our portfolio through single-family rentals in Denver to multifamily and other single-family and some commercial in Connecticut down to a fleet of vacation rentals in Florida. Start to see the trend? We started to head to water. Mm-hmm. We only paused in Connecticut because the water wasn't warm. And we said, no, this is not going to work. And along the way, and this is like bonus to the 1031, if you simply buy a property and move into it and live in it for 2 years, then you can sell it and you can take as a married couple the first $500,000 in profit tax-free. So well, we started to do that. Yeah.
Even if you've even if the bulk of the money into that property is 1031 exchange money, if you move into it for 2 years, does that then alleviate all the pent up?
Now that's the conversion. What I was simply talking about is just something that's available to everybody.
Gotcha.
Yeah. You simply buy a property and move in at your primary residence.
Yeah.
And you could do that once every 2 years.
Right. Yep.
Tax. But you just hinted at the what pours gasoline on this fire. And that is that you absolutely can convert your 1031 properties into a series of primary residences. And then once you've owned them long enough and you sell them, you get a proration of the gain.
Okay.
Tax-free. So literally between simply buying our own and selling them and converting, we were able to buy the 53-foot sailboat, move our 4 children aboard it, and sail away for 10 years, living off the income from the deferred tax on our vacation rentals.
Oh, my God.
It was awesome.
Oh, my goodness. So how old were the kids when you guys were all living on a 50-foot boat?
We actually got the fourth one while we were on it. So he never knew anything but the boat. He was a true boat kid. Our youngest one was 3 when he moved on. So he really didn't know anything. By the way, lifesavers, life jackets are great at saving your nerves. You just wrap them up, and then if they fall off, they fall off. Odo gets them back on. Our other two guys were like 6 and 7.
Okay. And so, wow. I mean, those are real formative years. And so your kids, looking back, are they, do they just have the greatest memories of living on a boat for 10 years?
They think it was the greatest time of their lives. Matter of fact, even once we got back to dry land, the two oldest boys kind of, well, pun intended, they kind of lost their sea legs. Hmm. They kind of felt adrift. They did not have common experiences.
Yeah. Right.
The other kids were talking about iCarly and Nickelodeon and all that. My guys were saying, you mean you never free dive for lobsters?
Right. Yeah, wow. Yeah, such a culturally different experience than, you know, Main Street USA. How interesting. Wait, so
where all did you go? Yeah. I mean, you talk about lobsters. Were you down in the Caribbean? Did you go?
Yeah, we started out in Southwest Florida. Our vacation rentals, they were in Cape Coral, Florida. By the way, this was so long ago that our vacation rentals were on the front page of this new startup company that was going to market vacation rentals, called VRBO. So we were actually at ground zero when they started developing. And we were doing all those old things like vlogs, video logs, and all that kind of stuff before YouTube was even a real thing. It was amazing. It was cool. We started out there. We spent several years down in Key West. That was a hoot. We went all through the Everglades. That's like the land that time forgot. Mm-hmm. We'd go back and disappear there for 6 months at a time.
Wow.
We spent a lot of time. We spent several periods of months in Fort Jefferson, which is a little island 70 miles off Key West, and then all up and down the east and west coast of Florida and the Bahamas.
Wow.
Whenever we got tired of the view or the neighbors, just cast off the dock lines and moved.
Just moved.
Yeah.
Man. Do you still own a boat? Are you still out in the water very much, or is that chapter closed?
We are boatless, but we will still periodically rent them. We turn into beach people. I had to stay close to the water. Mm-hmm. But I know it beckons every once in a while. We'll probably wait till we get all the kids out of the house. And then I'll grab mama and we'll see if I can talk her into it again.
Wow.
Yeah.
She would say yes in a heartbeat as well.
So interesting. Well, so you guys basically started the 1031 business then while you were boating? Or how did the business come about?
We started it during that 10-year period while we were transitioning to the boat.
Okay.
And then for a lot of our early days, Wi-Fi was still, speaking of Wi-Fi, Kevin, yeah. Wi-Fi was tough to find. So you would literally find us in certain marinas, or we would be anchored up on shore as close as we could get to a big mansion that had good service so that I could run my business from the boat.
Just borrowing Wi-Fi from different mansions you could get close to.
Yeah, fortunately, I didn't have to provide office space for the staff. So that would have been a disaster.
Unbelievable. Well, so let's talk about your business for a second. So how'd you get your business started? And you were, I'm assuming, working with just full-time real estate investors, part-time real estate. How did that evolve for you?
I had some friends, really good friends. You know, the kind that will mercilessly mock you when you make a mistake and then have your back to help you fix it. So I had some friends that watched me that when I told them about what had happened with my duplex, and they said, oh, Dave, we're thinking to start a company that's going to do these 1031 exchanges. And I said, tell me more. And so they said, you want to join? I said, absolutely, let's go. And in the early days, it was kind of amusing. We would like take the staff out for an evening at a dinner theater or something. And the MC would point us out and say, what do you guys do? We're a qualified intermediary service for 1031 exchanges. He goes, what's that? Because nobody knew. And one of my partners would always say, well, if we told you, we'd have to kill you. That was not real good marketing. But we stopped that. And that's exactly right. At first, we started educating title companies and began working with them because they have to be involved. And then we turned that into realtor boards, providing free continuing education credits for realtors. And then lastly, we started really marketing towards the individual investor. Because I've always been a fan of what I call waterhole marketing, which is like that old Far Side cartoon where you see these two cheetahs up on a hillside above a pond, and they've got aprons, they've got napkins around their necks, and they're watching all the animals come down to the pond to drink. And the caption is, watering holes of the Serengeti. It's where they congregate. So that's what we try to do, is find out what every 1031 investor needed and had to have. And then that's where we put our focus. When the crash happened in 08, 1031s died again. Two-thirds of the realtors in America went out of business. Three-fourths of my old clients were either dead or senile. So, and the largest buying demographic for the last 15 years at that time of the crash was in middle school. So nobody knew about 1031s. So that's when we developed the 1031 investor to start to re-educate a whole nation about this incredibly powerful tool.
Well, let's maybe for the most of our listeners have heard of the 1031, probably know it in theory, but maybe just break it down. Why don't you tell us kind of where it exists in the tax code and what exactly it does for you?
Now, Section 1031 originally designed for farmers because we were trying to, since 1920, we were trying to grow agribusiness in America. Farmers could not sell their farms and buy bigger ones because of the tax they had to pay in the middle. They just didn't have enough money. And that meant that not only they couldn't grow, but new farmers wanting to come in and start couldn't buy the small farms because they weren't selling them. So that's why they did it. And what it literally allows you to do is simply sell investment real estate and buy new investment real estate. And as long as you purchase at least as much as you sell and you follow a couple timelines, you'll indefinitely defer all of the tax and all of the depreciation recapture that normally you would have had to pay. I mean, that's the 10-second nutshell. The application of it, though, has become huge. Mm-hmm. Things like being able to convert your primary residence into and start eliminating the tax. The ability to adjust to wherever the market is. So many people will say, well, I want to sell it in Silicon Valley, and I want to start buying in Austin. The 1031 lets you go anywhere in the country, mm-hmm. and it lets you go back and forth in between any type of real estate. So you could go single family to commercial, industrial to raw land, Arizona to Maine. It all works. So you can see where the market is telling you to invest and go there and still get to keep using the tax for your own benefit. So that's literally how powerful it is. And for the investor, it's as simple as selling, following a couple of rules, and then buying. And the most important rule, guys, and I always love to emphasize this, is that you cannot do it yourself. You have to use an unrelated third party called a qualified intermediary, and they have to be involved prior to the closing of the sale. Because I still get calls every month from someone that sold last week, and they're ready to do a 1031. And she's like, all I can do is just weep with them because they're not. They're
too
not.
Late. Too late. As a qualified intermediary, are you taking the proceeds and holding an escrow, or what's your role? Is it just documentation? What does it look like to be an intermediary?
Yeah, there's actually three different key roles. Documentation, because we have to have documentation as part of the closing of both the sale and the purchase. We have to hold the proceeds. For some reason, the IRS doesn't trust you with your own money. Go figure. Mm-hmm. So we have to hold the proceeds in between the sale and the purchase. And lastly is consulting, because we have to help make sure that you're guided through the maze of the process correctly. Hmm.
So talk to us maybe just a minute about some of the rules, some of those guidelines, you know, that you have to, because it is a little bit stringent, right? There is a time component to it. Maybe talk to us for just a minute about what that looks like.
Yeah, the timing components are fairly stringent. You have 45 days from the day you sell your old property, simply to identify your new properties. Now, you don't have to have them under contract, but once day 45 passes, that list becomes set in stone. So if you lose your properties at your past day 45, you're not going to get a fine more. No. So I usually tell people, don't think of it as an identification period. Think of it as an, oh my gosh, I got to get this property under contract period, because it helps you mitigate the risk. And as a matter of fact, a great hack that a lot of our clients will do is they'll get under contract for their new property before they sell their old property.
Yeah.
And we did this in California for like 2 or 3 years. Yeah. They would literally work hard to try and find their new property, get it under contract, and then put their old property up for sale and have 29 cash offers over asking on day one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So my advice, always take care of the hard thing first.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Find your new property's art, locate it, get it under contract.
Yep.
It's going to be harder to sell your old property, get it on the market, get a contract, then start looking for your new property.
Yeah. So 45 days to just add it to a list of these are all the potential properties that I may end up buying. And then how long do you have to close?
180 days, again, from the closing of your sale.
Okay.
So that's actually quite a bit of time. Usually people don't have problems with it. But again, another life hack that so many investors are seeing now, because you guys read the reports too. You know how critical our new housing stock is right now. Well, many of our clients will go into contract for a new build a year and a half before they sell their old property. Because that's how long it's going to take to build. Mm-hmm. When the builder calls them up and says, hey, we're 3 months away from having it done, get ready. They'll put their old property on the market, close the sale of it, and now they're within 2 or 3 months of completing their purchase. Mm-hmm. So they're able to go from, say, a 1920s bungalow duplex that needs a new roof and has an old HVAC and all kinds of capital expense things that could strip away years of cash flow, sell that, do a 1031 exchange without paying any tax, and buy something brand new where you don't have to worry about CapEx for a bunch of years.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
See how that transition can happen?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in new construction, isn't there a provision for new construction if you were going to build the house?
It's a little quirky at that. That's the deep end of the pool, the 1031 pool, because you cannot exchange into improvements on property you own. So if you already own a lot, you're done. Can't do anything else with it. If you buy the lot, you can't then build on it. But there's a thing called a reverse exchange where we take title to the lot. And while we hold it, the property is being improved and built on. The problem is it doesn't work great with construction, with the new construction, because again, you only have, it's the same amount of days, 180 days from the day we take title to the lot to complete your purchase. So for new construction, that's kind of tough to do. Yeah. For something that needs improvement, like buying a large multifamily that needs a couple hundred thousand dollars of upgrades, sell your $500,000 property and then use $300 to buy the multi and use the other two to upgrade it using an improvement exchange. That can happen within 180 days.
Okay. I gotcha.
Yeah, those things are a little complex.
So in that scenario, you know, let's say you cleared $500,000, but you're buying a multi-million dollar property. You're taking that money that you earned from the previous one, and then maybe using that as a down payment, and then also using that as repairs. Doesn't really matter. It's all going into the new investment property, even if it's
yeah. That's exactly right. You could take $100,000 and use that as a down payment on, or $200,000, use it as on something large.
Yeah.
The rest of the money that's not needed for the down payment, you could structure that reverse improvement exchange.
Gotcha.
To improve it, and of course, the key is that you hope that when those improvements are done, it's now a $3 million property.
Right.
What do? Turn around and refinance it. Pull all your cash out. And now you've got a building that you don't have anything in.
Yeah.
But the tenants are paying the mortgage on.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I didn't even think about that fact that you could go into something, you could scale into something bigger and then refinance your money back out on an exchange.
Yeah. Cause we'll have a lot of people that'll say, I want cash for whatever reason. And that's okay. You can take cash out, but the IRS always makes you pay tax on it. So the idea of instead do the 1031 exchange, purchase at least as much as you sell, then cash out refi after the fact.
My goodness. How cool. Talk to us for just a second on how the title companies work with you, because they're involved from the get-go, right? So what is that? Because I'm assuming you're having to educate them. Not all of them understand how it works. What do you do in those situations?
Yeah, usually with title companies, they're great because they understand documents, they understand settlement statements, and so we're able just to give them a blow-by-blow set of instructions. Simply do this, you'll be fine, and then we sign off to make sure that they've done it. But I think the key point in all of this is that you as the investor use all of your regular professionals just the way you normally would. So if it's a title company that usually closes, your title company is going to close this. We're just an added-on feature. Yeah, you use your same realtors. By law, all we can do is your 1031 exchanges. And by law, you know, your qualified intermediary can't do anything else for you. So we're kind of like Switzerland, right? Where everybody's buddy.
Yeah. It's where they're right in the middle.
And title companies don't like hassle, if you haven't noticed. So for us to come in and be able to give it to them step by step and make it easy for them, they love that.
Yeah, anything out of the box, a lot of times will rattle a title company or a closing attorney. Not that this, like you said, it's not so far out of the box anymore, maybe is what it used to feel like, you know, a decade or two ago. But still, yeah. It's, you know, it's, for them, it's not part of their normal, you know, course of doing business. And so, yeah, having to be the educator in the process and bring them up to speed and hold their hand and all those things, I'm sure it's a big part of the job.
Yeah, here's a funny thought for you, too. Think about it from a lender's perspective. Everybody goes, but Dave, aren't these really complicated for lending? I said, no. Lenders love 1031 exchanges because they can always source where the money's at and they know the money's not leaving.
Oh, that's true.
They know you're not going to go buy a moped 2 weeks before closing that you forget to tell them about.
Yeah, it's sitting in your account, not in my account where I can turn around and spend it accidentally.
Exactly. Yeah, that drives lenders crazy, doesn't it? What do you mean you bought a truck?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you took out credit? What? Yeah, exactly. Now, you had mentioned that you, I mean, speaking of mopeds and speaking of, you had bought your, did you say you bought your boat on a 1031? Is a boat qualified for a 1031?
No, it does not, because we haven't figured, we've never figured that out. Now, you can deduct mortgage interest on a boat as long as it's got a bathroom, a head, and a galley, okay. A kitchen, but it's not considered to be real estate. What we did was we converted 1031 properties into our primary residence and then sold them after long enough. So part of that money was tax-free. Yeah. And the tax-free money went into the buy the boat kitty. But we did live on our boat in a piece of 1031 real estate that had been purchased by one of my clients.
So it was like a marina or something like that? That was a 1031 exchange?
Good guess. It was a boat slip. It was a boat slip at a marina that had been condominiumized.
Oh, interesting.
So that you got a deed. It was a deeded boat slip. So literally, my client finished his exchange. It was in Key West, Florida. I said, dude, what are you going to do with that slip? He said, nothing. You want to rent it? I said, say no more. We'll be there in a week. And we rented a 1031 piece of 1031 real estate for several years from him.
Wow. How interesting. So you've got, I feel like you're full of these just interesting nuggets. So maybe let's tantalize our listeners for a minute. Give us some of these ones that, you know, that people aren't thinking about. It's not necessarily our purview. Even when we're thinking about 1031s, there's some of these exceptions that, you know, that make it even cooler.
Let's play a game of, well, when you talk about exceptions, you're talking about exception to what real estate is.
Yeah, not necessarily exceptions, but cool caveats that most people wouldn't think about, you know, as it relates to 1031s and maybe even other real estate tax strategies in general. Not just
okay, so we're gonna play a game of the four D's.
Okay.
And we're gonna pit brother against brother.
Oh boy.
You guys ready?
Oh yeah.
Okay, there are four D's
okay.
that go along with 1031 investing. I'll give you guys both the first one.
Okay.
The first one is defer. Because when you defer paying tax on the profits from a sale, whether you're able to keep it deferred for 2 years or 30 years, the money you make off of that is yours. So you're benefiting your bank account, not the government's. And that can be huge over the course of time, can't it? Just for my little example, $30,000 to over $500,000. Is what it would have been. So defer is the first D. All right, Ken and Kevin, what do you guys think the second D is?
I just watched Ken Google it, so I think he's got a heads up on me.
I'm quickly.
He is such a cheater, isn't he?
I'm cheating so bad. I'm
going to say deed. How about deed? Because I didn't Google it.
Monty, what do you guys? Deed. Survey says deed.
If you would have Googled maybe a different video, you'd have got it right. The second D is actually defer. And here's why. We kind of hinted at it.
Wait, I thought you said the first one was defer.
It was.
The second one's defer.
Nothing gets by you, kid.
I think I know what the third one is.
Wait a second. I'm sensing a trend here.
Yeah. Because you can meet wherever the market is telling you to go. And we did kind of hint at that. You can use the 1031 to go from one property to multiple properties. Now think about how powerful that is. I bought a property for $200,000. I'm selling it for $4,000. Well, if I buy a $400,000 property, maybe a $400,000 property only rents for $3,500 a month. But a $200,000 property rents for $2,000 a month. So instead of simply buying one, I sell the $400,000 property and I go buy two $200,000 properties. I could also go the exact opposite direction, which is very common. Sell five $100,000 properties and use those proceeds to purchase one $500,000 multifamily. Here's a really cool hack using the diversification exchange. Let's say that I sell a property for $500,000 and it has $300,000 in debt. So I got $200,000 in cash, right? I sold for five. I have to buy $500,000 in real estate using $200,000 in cash. I'm sorry, $300,000 in cash. So the first property that I buy is a property for $250,000. And I pay cash for it because I got $300,000 in cash. Mm-hmm. I take the other $50,000. I go buy a property for $250,000, 20% down. Did I purchase at least as much as I sold? Yep. Did I use all my proceeds? Yep. So no tax, all taxes deferred. But I have two properties instead of one. I have a property that is basically recession-proof because I just got to keep the lights on. And for everybody who loves to do things like buy into syndications or buy equities and stocks, instead of selling your real estate and paying tax, do a cash-out refinance on the free and clear property and take that money and go invest in a syndication or go buy stocks with it. So you keep all of the real estate benefits, but you also got free cash to go invest however you want.
That's huge. It's funny. I've never put those two together in my mind. The idea of doing the 1031 and then pulling all your cash out and then putting whatever you want. Then you're not limited to real estate anymore. Now it's cash in your pocket to go invest wherever.
Exactly. Because my biggest beef in my life and what I tell to our clients is it frustrates me to spend years trying to keep tax deferred so that I've got this built up tax that's making money for me. But then finally just to sell it to go invest in a syndication or to go buy stocks, even though their return is great, it takes years to recoup what you had to pay in tax.
Mm-hmm.
Cash out refinance solves all that.
Mm-hmm. It's tax free money. That's a beautiful thing about a refi. People forget
you
pull money out of your equity. You're not paying taxes on that. It's money in your bank account. You didn't pay taxes on.
So still not. It's always going to let you do what you want.
Yeah.
So Kevin, what's the third D?
I don't think it's deed. I tell you that.
Defer.
Are we back to deed now?
We're back to deed. The third
defer. D. I think it's going to be defer.
I think you're right. You notice Kid didn't even say he was trying to hedge his bets.
No, I said defer. I chimed in. I figured out the first two. I was like, I feel pretty good about the third one. I think it's probably going to.
Here's why.
There's a pattern occurring here.
Just like you can meet the market wherever it's at, you can use the 1031 exchange to help you achieve whatever it is, wherever it is you find yourself on your own personal journey. We're not the same investor we were yesterday. We're not the same investor we're going to be in a year. And the mark of a successful real estate investor is understanding what your needs are and being able to meet them. When we start out, generally, we don't got money, but we got energy, don't we? We got time. And so we buy a small property and we elbow grease it and fix it up. We start our process. But at some point in time, we start to realize, like Vicky and I did, that time's really our most valuable commodity. So rather than this whole huge bunch of single-family rentals, let's start to consolidate and go from more active to passive management. The most money I ever made in my life, I made off of 4 properties. That was all we owned other than our development project. But they were the 4 right properties generating the right income. Mm-hmm. So wherever you're at, getting close to retirement, start to sell in 1031 exchange your properties from where you live in Cleveland to Sarasota, Florida, where you want to retire. So that when you retire, look what happens. You sell your primary residence in Cleveland. That's tax-free. You go down to Florida, but instead of having to use the tax-free money to buy another primary residence, convert one of your 1031 properties.
Convert from a 1031 into your primary residence, you're saying?
Exactly. I have a client on St. Pete Beach that used a 1031, and his final one, and he bought 3 identical beachfront condos. I mean, they literally were on the same floor. And he used one for rental for a few years, a couple of years, and then he moved into the first one. Converted. Once he owned it for 5 years, he sold it. Because he had lived in it for 3 out of the 5 years, he got to take 60% of the gain tax-free. Now remember, he's retired. What an awesome. And if he was going to have a job, he was going to be delivering pizzas or bagging groceries, so he'd have to pay some taxes anyways. But this way, all he did was go out and drink coffee on his deck. And he got to take 60% of his gain tax-free. Where do you think he moved?
Into another one,
next door.
Yeah.
And did it again.
How interesting.
That's a pretty incredible retirement strategy. All right, so the most clever and creative, but not my favorite, strategy is the fourth D. I got to hear from both of you. What do you think it is?
Defer. Yeah, I want to try to time that with you. We missed it.
Really?
There's some latency on the Wi-Fi.
That's what it is. We're going to blame it on the Wi-Fi. Differ.
I thought I taught you guys better. It's not.
Oh, come on.
It's die.
Die. That got dark real fast.
I know, right? Well, like I said, it's not my favorite, but we're all here.
Defer.
And die. But here's why.
That was my next question. So does a state inherit the 1031 deferred taxes, or does it go away? Does it proof of literate?
It goes away.
It does on your death.
You get a step up in basis for your heirs. You don't pay the tax. Your estate doesn't pay the tax. Your heirs don't pay the tax. It goes to your heirs tax free.
Really?
I have a family in Connecticut who are on their 3rd generation of 1031 investing. They haven't paid a penny in capital gains for over 20 years.
Wow.
Because when granddad found us, he used us to do his 1031 exchanges. And when he died, his properties went to his son. His son got them tax-free. Now, we didn't see him for a few years, did we? Because he inherited it with no tax due. But after a few years, his son started doing his 1031 exchanges with us. And when he died just a few years ago, his children inherited the properties.
Tax-free.
And we are just now starting to see them do their own.
Wow, that's crazy.
That's how wealth is built in this country.
Wow, that's insane. I had no idea. I thought that you always assume you pay the piper at some point in time. And so upon death, not even on death do you pay the piper in a 1031 exchange. You just keep the process going.
That's the most common question I get from accountants, stuff, people like that. Yeah, Dave, why do it? It's just deferred. I got to pay it anyways. Well, I just gave you guys 5 or 6 ways that you don't ever have to pay it.
Yeah.
But you said you were sending that book to us, right? That book's coming to us, right?
The book is coming to you guys. Yeah. Sorry you didn't get it yet.
We need the book, man. Yeah, I'm sure there's lots of this fun stuff going on in there.
We actually put a whole section at the end of actual case studies of people that have used us in their own journey. Different people, military people, people that had to start life over, people that started young. people that went from land development into 1030, from fix and flip into 1031 careers, and it tracks exactly what they did. So depending on what you guys want to do with your life, you're probably going to find a case study in there that'll give you an example of someone who went before.
All right, so give us the name of the book.
It's called Lifetime Tax-Free Wealth. I know, it's such a sexy title. The 1031, the Real Estate Investor's Guide to the 1031 Exchange. I know, the title sounds like it's guaranteed to make you snooze off, but there really is some good nuggets, just like what we've talked about.
Oh, I love it. Like Lifetime Tax-Free Wealth. And you've got a YouTube channel and a website. Where can they find you?
Dare I ask you to check it out and subscribe? Make this boomer feel like he's relevant. It's YouTube / the 1031 investor. We have, I think, over 50 videos right now on different aspects of these exact kinds of things. And they're all short because I have the attention span of a golden retriever with memory loss. So I use YouTube like I am. So you're going to get in there, you're going to get your information, and then you're going to get out. So please do come and subscribe. And we're starting to do lives now. Those YouTube lives are
cool. Yeah. Heck yeah.
Yeah. They say there's no time limit on those. But again, with my attention span, 1 minute's good enough to give you the information you need. So youtube.com/the1031investor and our educational website, where we've got calculators, articles. We've got access to senior consultants, myself and my colleagues, who can walk you through these things at the1031investor.com.
The1031investor.com. Awesome. Dave, I'm sure that people are going to dive into this and have all these questions answered by your book, by your videos, by the website, because I feel like this is one of those, there's so many rabbit holes I feel like we could go down with tax strategies and 1031. I feel like even this podcast was just scraping the surface. Sort of, it's like tantalizing, all these interesting things that, you know, we're not implementing in our day-to-day business that we should be, because of the exact reason you said, all the compounding interest that's available to us if we'll just implement some of these strategies rather than just sell and pay the piper.
You know, there's an old adage in real estate that says you make money when you buy real estate. And what they're saying is what? That the best deals you can find, that's where you really make your money. Mm-hmm. But what I've discovered in my life, and so many others have as well, is that, first of all, it's not how much you make that determines your success. It's how much you get to keep. And the way you determine what you get to keep is how you sell it.
Yep. Love it. Good stuff. Dave, great to meet you. Really enjoyed our time today. All you folks listening, check out the 1031 investor on YouTube. Check it out online and check out the book on Amazon, Lifetime Tax-Free Wealth. Dave, thanks again.
Great to be here. That was fun.
Take care. Kevin, was that good or what?
Oh, man, what a great guest. I mean, I think we could have spent another hour talking to him.
No, for sure. It's easy to go down rabbit holes with him. He's got just such a wealth of information. No pun intended, since his book is called Lifetime Tax-Free Wealth. I'll tell you the coolest takeaway, I think, from, you know, I've known about 1031s, familiar with them, but I think the most intriguing takeaway first that never dawned on me until this conversation was this whole idea of 1031ing into a property, you know, and even splitting it up so that one property is free and clear, and then you pull the equity out. So you access that tax-free money via refi. I don't know why that never dawned on me before. That's
powerful. So you're actually so the whole purpose is, you know, to keep your money in a property, but you can actually cash out tax-free and then use that money.
Absolutely. Yeah. Not only is it tax-free because it's a refi, it's tax-free because you pulled it out of the last property and put it into the next property tax-free. I mean, that's super powerful. And then you can pull it out and do whatever you want with it. It doesn't even have to be real estate. You go buy gold with it or any other sort of wealth building tool. Yeah.
Now, one thing I meant to ask, and I just didn't want to look dumb, but if you 1031 into a rental, and you're getting rental income, now you're going to pay taxes on the rental income.
It's income, it's income. But again, the whole idea of scaling up. So let's say you take, you know, $100,000 house, you make $100,000 on it. Well, that $100,000 can be a down payment on $1 million property now.
Right,
and so
think
about the income potential in $1 million property, just because you were able to scale up. And that's
scaling and scaling and stepping up across decades.
That's right.
Crazy.
Into higher income generating properties. That's the beautiful thing about it.
Right.
Is, yeah, you can leverage, you know, that tax-free ability into something much bigger.
Well, you and I were on the same page as far as bringing him in. I'd really like to bring him back in and speak to the Red Barn homebuyers, you know, our group. I think, you know, because they're buying and selling left and right, you know, turning properties over on a regular basis. I think he'd be a huge resource for our group just to invest a bit more time.
Agreed. Now, I just liked him on a personal level, too. He's just a really cool dude. I could definitely see. It's not like I don't have a great 1031 guy that I'm loyal to. He's somebody I would use in a heartbeat. He clearly knows his stuff. He's been at it a long time.
Yeah.
So good stuff, man.
And he lived on a boat. I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah.
He lived on a boat.
I think that's so stinking cool. I don't know if I could be that close to my family for 10 years. I mean, I like my family, but I like my space too.
I'd be worried someone, one of the kids would drown. I like being on the water, but at some point, man, someone's falling in the water and getting left behind.
You get really mad at one of them. Just like, push them off. Just push them into the water.
Like, yep. Here's a life ring. We'll come back for you tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. Hold on to this for an hour or two. Yeah.
Well, you got to share it. When you buy that surf boat, man, you got to send me a picture. We got to get on the water
today. Well, you might need to come down to Atlanta and get on the water too.
I think that as the weather warms up, we need to make that happen.
All right. So you're saying, I have it on record, if I buy the boat, you're coming down.
That's right. That's my motivation.
Okay.
I'm motivated by water.
Deal. We'll make it happen. I will. Hey, how about we talk next week and I'll give you an update on where I stand with the new boat.
Love it. Let's make it happen.
All right. Catch you later, man.
All right. See ya.
Friends, thanks so much for making it all the way to the end of today's podcast. If you or possibly a friend has any interest in learning more about real estate investing or opportunities with Red Barn Homebuyers, take a minute and head on over to redbarnhomes.com and check out our investors page or our franchise page, or just drop us a note. We'd love to hear from you. Can't wait to see you on the next episode of The Deal Farm. Hey friends, just a final thought before you check out. You know, so many of us are going 100 miles an hour through life. We're weighed down by stress or worry or even that haunting feeling of emptiness. But it doesn't have to be that way. I've actually put together a quick resource at faithcrossroad.com where I share just a little bit about the faith that gives me hope and purpose and identity, and I'd love to share it with you. Again, faithcrossroad.com.